Quick school.
Are we ready?
Well, yours, my kids are in daycare,
Are we ready?
Yeah, I'm fine. William finished up last week.
Work outside the house as well, yeah.
I do work outside
the
house.
I mean, yeah. This is your, this is really your lifestyle change.
Are you ready for a full-time live-at-home child?
Yeah. Yes.
We're all praying for you.
But I do look forward to it.
Sure.
In case she's listening.
No, really, honey. I swear I look forward to this.
All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take your faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, Pastor Joe Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter.
Still here, still pretty successful.
All right. Well, back together again. This is exciting.
Yeah.
Soon you'll be gone.
Soon. Soon and very soon.
Yeah. On a sabbatical.
It's like you're dying. Yeah.
It does sound like I'm dying.
Soon you'll be gone.
I mean, we're all dying, right? We're all just inching towards our own graves.
We're like cut flowers. We're already dead. We just don't know it yet. Yeah.
It's lovely. Some of us know it more than others.
Right.
You're not exactly wrong.
I didn't say it.
I mean, yeah.
No, I will be going on a sabbatical in July and we'll be gone until mid-September.
Fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Will you miss us while you're gone?
I will absolutely miss you while I'm gone.
Now,
You heard it here first.
That I would miss you?
Yeah.
We will probably pre-record some, but we don't have enough time to get all of those.
June is crazy town with mission trips and camps and stuff like that.
So yeah. And my birthday. No big deal.
And mine too.
And your birthday. No big deal.
Yeah. Neither of your birthdays are the reason that our recording schedule is messed
up. It might be.
It might be. Maybe. Yeah, two birthdays. So we're not. So it'll be Elise and I for a good portion.
Yeah.
Plus maybe some revolving guests.
Sure.
Probably, you know,
revolving guests.
Yeah.
They'll be spinning.
We're
going
to make them spin.
Yeah. My son does have a little chair that you can sit in and spin around in.
Love this. Yeah.
He likes it. So. All right. So we're going to talk about the Nicene Creed today.
Okay.
Ooh,
but
nerdy.
First.
Church nerdy.
Let's get to our news. We're going to talk about our good friend ChatGPT again.
Oh, boy. Oh,
okay. What's up, Chad?
ChatGPT.
That's what I like to go. I learned recently that I think it's French in ChatGPT sounds like a
cat
French
peeing.
For a cat peeing. And so like all over the world, they're like, a cat peeing on your thing is going to.
For those who speak French.
Right. Yeah. It's,
Oh.
Yeah. Oui, oui.
Oui, oui, baguette.
All right.
ChatGPT.
So I've said on the podcast, I'm a user of ChatGPT. They edit a lot of my stuff. My council report I wrote, and then ChatGPT edited it for me last night. So
did it tell you how lovely a council report you wrote?
No.
My friend uses it for her writing as like a fake think tank. So she has like Simon Cowell editing her stuff and like giving his opinion.
Okay.
And like all these different characters.
So I like edit this as if you were Simon Cowell.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Okay. That's interesting. That's fun. Yeah. What, not Paula? Not Randy?
No. So she's got like Simon Cowell. She's got a physicist who I can't remember his name right now. She's Catholic, so she has a saint.
Sure.
You're right.
Sure.
So just kind of getting what.
Does she have the new pope?
I can ask her.
Yeah.
Might be an oversight.
Get the new pope.
He seems kind of like spicy a little bit. Like he.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Sure,
I'm into it.
Yeah. All right. Well, you don't really use the ChatGPT.
I've used it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, would you use ChatGPT for relationship advice?
No. I barely use other humans for relationship advice, let alone a computer.
There's no such thing as good relationship advice. You're doomed.
If you need relationship advice, it's already too late.
Right. Yeah.
It's you and the contents of your own head, and that's it. You're alone in this world.
There's a hopeful outlook, folks.
Yeah. We're all cut flowers.
Woman files for divorce after advice from ChatGPT.
Okay.
Okay. Well, how's she doing?
That might be the right decision for this woman. I don't know.
It is not, based on the article.
All
right.
You don't know her life?
I do know
I think we're about to.
I do know the article. All right. So she and her husband were, decided to get into Greek coffee.
Greek coffee,
misstep.
Is Greek coffee a thing? I didn't know.
I don't drink coffee.
Is it like Turkish coffee?
I don't know.
Okay. I don't know.
Probably somebody knows.
Yeah. So.
Listeners.
So she wanted to do some taseography.
Somewhat.
That's where you take the photo of the remaining coffee grounds in your cup and get like a reading from it.
Okay.
So you might know it from Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tea leaves.
Yeah.
Yes. Because they do that and they see the wolf.
Yeah.
And that's actually Sirius Black. So there you go.
Yeah. What did she see?
So she took photos of the coffee cups and sent them to ChatGPT.
Love
and
this.
And said, like, what is this? What are the, what is our reading?
Mm-hmm.
ChatGPT reportedly saw signs of infidelity, specifically that her husband was fantasizing about a woman whose name started with an E, and Elise.
Uh-oh.
And that this one was trying to destroy their family.
Sounds right.
Yeah.
Only one decision to be made at this point. Kick him out of the house.
Only one.
That was ChatGPT. That's what
she decided.
Okay. She kicked him out because he's fantasizing.
I thought
about
that was ChatGPT's like final line. Like, there's only one decision for you to make.
Right. Yikes.
Kick him out. You can be mine forever.
Right.
Yeah. Husband said she's often into trendy things. One day she made a Greek coffee and thought it'd be fun to take pictures of the cup and have ChatGPT read them. Yeah.
That was it.
I laughed it off as nonsense, but she did not. She told me to leave, informed our kids about the divorce, and the next thing I knew, I was getting a call from her lawyer.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
Seems like there maybe were some other things happening in this relationship. Yeah. Maybe ChatGPT was the, I don't know, the AI that broke the camel's back, I think, in this particular case. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, maybe some slight instability
something
there.
Yeah. So this is a thing, you know, people are turning to the ChatGPT. I actually have an article that I thought I might want to use from Rolling Stone about how people are turning to like ChatGPT and AI for like spiritual inspiration.
Yikes.
And like friendship.
Nope.
And
I don't like much about this.
Mm-mm. Yeah, I think this is.
Yeah. You know. I will plug this book again. I did this a couple weeks ago.
Is
but
The Mountain and the
Underwater
Thing?
The Mountain and the Sea by Ray Naylor. Read it. It's really, really good. AI heavy.
Yeah.
So, oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I mean, if you're getting divorced over what ChatGPT said about your coffee, there's probably
other stuff,
some things happening in your relationship one way or another.
Right.
Or you're or she's convinced, truthfully or not, that this was a reality before this.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe husband is, unfaithful or maybe she's convinced he's unfaithful.
Yeah.
But if ChatGPT says, I see some infidelity.
I think in tea leaves, right? Like,
right. Yeah. That, if anybody says, I see some infidelity in tea leaves or coffee grounds,
right. Maybe we should ask some questions.
Right.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I need to see some infidelity in like receipts.
Sure.
Before I'm making jump into those conclusions.
If I were going to if you were going to read something for signs of not like legitimate things, not receipts, but if you're going to like read someone something to understand the future, what would be your tea leaf, coffee ground, etc. of choice? Like, I'm thinking like the remnants of the ice cream bowl or like the dregs of the cereal. Like, what would
the
be
dregs of the cereal?
Yeah, what would you want to read?
Yeah.
Okay.
I want to read the spaghetti sauce splatter. Like, after I've eaten the spaghetti.
You could be, like, an Italian soothsayer.
Yeah, so I get to, like,
Mamma Mia.
I get to eat the spaghetti, and then I see the remnants, and I read the spaghetti sauce splatter. Right. I think that sounds delicious.
So should this be something that we feel a personal connection to? Like, a food that
That sounds great,
intuitive with?
Or why not? I'm making this up as I go along. Right. Yeah. What do you food do you intuit?
Maybe, like, the fat trimmings off of a steak.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mine is probably a stain on a t-shirt from trying to eat in the car.
That's what I mean.
Show me your old t-shirt that you sleep in.
Yeah.
Read this where I spilt ketchup from a burger that I ate in the car.
Yeah.
Or mustard or whatever.
Love that. That's great.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would you want ChatGPT to read it? Or, you know, are you going to?
I would be curious.
I kind of want to do this.
If I hold up my spaghetti stained plate and say, ChatGPT, what does this tell me about my future?
Right. We should have it read our tea leaves next week on the podcast.
Yeah, that's a good call.
I have to like tea first.
Well,
I can drink tea.
Read in your spaghetti thing.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'll bring in my plate.
Bring in your spaghetti splatter and have it say, these are tea leaves.
All right. So next week I'll bring in my laptop and we can have it. I'll figure out a way to read.
We're definitely going to remember to do this.
Probably
it's
not.
Be great.
Probably not.
I'll remind you.
Probably not.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also, one, will we remember? And two, could I, you know, do it?
Could we figure it out? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Who
we
knows?
Will try.
We will try.
Our promise to you, we will sort of half-heartedly
on my
try.
Way in, I do pass a like tarot and palm readings.
Oh, there we go.
Out of like a home.
Yeah.
But for like 2 years, it had like a giant crash in the wall from a car. So
nice.
Didn't see that one coming. Yes.
Right.
Or did. I don't know.
Maybe they weren't in the building at the time.
They're like, we got to get out.
Yeah. I told you.
Yep. All right. Let's get to our main topic.
That's what we should really do. We should bring in that tarot reader and have them read it versus ChatGPT.
Yeah. Mano a mano.
Yeah.
I did an escape room recently where they did a tarot reading for me beforehand.
Before the escape room.
Yeah. It was. The theme is a seance.
Okay.
It's incredible. It was the production values were off the charts.
Where was that? In Houston?
In Houston. Yeah. But... really fun. Cool. Yeah.
I've had Tara read before. Not really.
Not my thing.
Not my thing, but my friend is very into it. And so she was like, I'm going to read your tarot. And I was like, okay. So.
Yeah, not my thing. You know, don't remember one thing that she said or was not super invested in it. Yeah. No. So, but for the sake of the theme of the escape room, I was like, sure.
Flip
over the cards. The cards are pretty.
If nothing else, I appreciate you sharing this so that everyone on the podcast can know that you're both going to hell. So that's. Yeah. We're just like, we can all clarify
all
that.
All the evangelicals in our lives are like, yikes.
Yeah. So when you get to heaven and I'm not there, you're like, right. I remember that's the tarot.
Now we know.
Yeah. I was confused, but that's why.
Now I get it. Now
he did
I get it.
He did
good call. Good call, Jesus. Good call. You got me.
All right. How the Nicene Creed became cool again.
Woo.
By Christianity Today. Yeah.
Crushing one, it since 300 AD, baby.
We're making two assumptions here. Right. One, that it is cool now, and two, that it was cool then. Yes.
These are
big assumptions.
They're large assumptions. That's true.
This is by Daniel Silliman.
Really?
Haven't we talked about Silliman before?
We definitely have, I think.
This is funny every time.
S-I-L-L-I, man. Yes.
Was it the same guy, or was it like a brother? Like, what's the...
Daniel Silliman.
I'm sure he probably pronounces it like Silliman, because I would.
No way. I'm going hard into Silliman.
Silly man.
Yeah. Yeah. This is actually a collection of interviews. So it's not that exciting to kind of go through them, but I will pull from the article. But I do want to... But I thought this was interesting to start talking about, the Nicene Creed, and it seems like... Christianity Today is going to be more in evangelical circles, which are not very liturgical in
not
their worship. But some of them are turning back to kind of more liturgical creeds or liturgical worship and things like that. So let's get into what is the Nicene Creed.
Oh, so. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
Well, I should start with what is a creed. That's probably a good place to start.
Sure. What is a creed?
What is a creed? Are you looking at me? I was looking at you.
A rock band from the aughts.
Sure. My favorite creed is Apollo Creed.
Yeah, sure. So. That's another good one. Any other creeds we want to get out there?
Assassins.
Assassin's Creed is a good one.
Yeah.
We don't recite that one in church. The Assassin's Creed.
So I know in the Lutheran Church we have three.
We have three that we claim as we hold our faith in these three. We have the Athanasian, which
definitely
we don't
know that.
You led with the Athanasian. That's interesting.
That's the one that nobody knows, right?
Literally never heard of it.
But it's there.
It's crazy long.
It is crazy long. Yeah. It's very elaborately laid as out the Trinity. Like, it goes into real detail about the Holy Spirit and other things, and it has a bunch of other stuff in it too. And it's not even in our current hymnal. In the older green LBW for those Lutherans who've been around for a while. It's in there, but it's not in the.
I have said it once in church.
I have never said it in church, except as a joke one time when we were prepping something.
That's
and we
joke.
Well, we happened to be in a sanctuary, so it wasn't like during a worship service, but that was the closest I ever came.
Right.
Yeah, I went when I worked at camp. We went to as a staff had to go to the small Lutheran church in town,
and they did the
and they did it.
Wow.
And I mean, we were 50% of the crowd, the 30 of us from camp, and like we read this Athanasian Creed all together, and then the pastor spilled communion wine all over me. So,
I love that. That's
and
great.
Then I should have Chappie read it. Yeah, that was my
that feels like a potent. Important.
Yeah. Potent.
Potent.
All right, so that's the Athanasian Creed. And then more commonly, we have the Apostles' Creed, which is the shortest of
the
them.
That's the one I know.
And then we have the Nicene Creed. And the Apostles' Creed, tradition says that it goes back to the original apostles. Historically, that's probably not completely accurate, but it's the earliest of the creeds that we can trace back. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Apostles' Creed and the Nicene Creed are similar.
Very similar.
Yeah. They definitely use the Apostles' Creed as kind of like the rough draft.
Mm-hmm.
And
that
like,
seems fair.
We got to like add some stuff.
Yeah.
And take away some stuff.
Yeah.
So, all right. What is, what's the Nicene Creed?
So the Nicene Creed is a statement of belief that was adopted by the Council of Nicaea in mid-300s after Emperor Constantine called together the leaders of the newly formed Holy Roman Empire Church. So he was establishing this church and said, hey, if we're making the church a political arm of the state, we need to establish what's in and what's out. So you all need to sit around and say, what do we believe? And so they sat around and they argued with each other for a long time and they came out with the Nicene Creed. And that's what we got.
There you go. So Nicaea, which is in modern-day Turkey.
Yep. That's where the council was held.
Yes.
Council of Nicaea.
Yeah. Big argument. Figuring out what is Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, this is like modern Christianity is birthed from this.
Yep, absolutely.
And not to say it didn't exist beforehand, but not all Christians were probably following modern Christianity. There was a lot of different opinions on who is Jesus, what is the divinity of Jesus look like, is there a Trinity? And so
this, I mean, there were gatherings of church leaders before this, but this was the first time that there was like a open, politically powerful gathering of religious leaders for the Christian movement. Because up to this point, right, Christianity was basically underground and illegal within the Roman Empire. And so there were places where Christian leaders were gathering and thinking about this, and the church was growing in all of these places, but there was no political power to be able to say, like, oh, let's all come together and figure out what we would like. And so now, again, because it's now the religion of the empire, everybody's got to be on the same page, or we can't decide who's breaking the law unless we're all on the same page.
A little tidbit that I just thought was interesting when I was doing just a very small amount of research ahead of time is that the Nicene Creed was sort of adopted as a direct response to several different, I don't know if you would call them like heresies at the time.
Probably.
Right?
But at the time, they definitely would have called them heresies.
In particular, Arianism, which is what like the Nazi party was drawing from, right? Which was interesting to me that there was...
I think those are different.
Well, so I think that it has its like Nazism, very different from Arianism, but I think it has its roots in the same thing, which is saying that so, Jesus is not divine, right?
Yes, but I think that when Nazis refer to Arianism, I think they're talking about a different thing.
Okay.
I don't know.
The Aryan race?
Right. And I don't think the Aryan race is connected to Arian, this guy who was a priest, bishop in the early church. I don't think that this... I could be wrong, but I don't think that it's...
Yeah, bears some more research maybe for both of us. But there was a very like similar kind of... Definitely similar undertones for sure.
Sure.
That they were kind of already...
Yeah.
Kind of trying to figure out how to deal with.
Arian and the divinity of Jesus was one of the big controversies that the Council of Nicaea was wrestling with, to be sure.
Yeah. So at this council, they put together the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
This is our modern Bible. This is from this council.
Well, ish.
Ish.
The modern Catholic Bible would be from this council.
Yeah. Then the Martin Luther and the Protestant Reformation.
That's our boy.
Get out of here, Maccabees.
A few things. Yeah. It's not like they just compiled all the works of Jesus. There were many that some early churches were using, and they were like, this, based on their understanding of the time, this is the most accurate.
Yeah, particularly the New Testament. This is where they were doing that work. Yeah,
correct. Yeah. And then they wrote the Creed. Mm-hmm. And it is addressing some theological controversy at the time. Mm-hmm. So first is definitely going to be the Trinity. That's why it's divided into three parts, Father, Son, and Spirit. And that's why they're really hitting the Trinity hard.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the big debates that they're going to have is, what is the Trinity? How does it work? And they all have different ideas.
Yep.
And they probably all ultimately walk away with a little bit of, I'm not quite sure, which is probably the right way to do it.
Yep.
But that's one of them. And the other one is Jesus.
Yeah.
Is Jesus God and man?
Yes.
And some of them are like, Jesus is like 99% God and 1% man. And some of them are like, the exact opposite.
Yeah.
You know, like a little bit of God and a lot of man, you know, but like that's figuring out these things. So that's why, you know, if you recite the Nicene Creed, it's going to like get in there with some language that kind of feels a little weird. You know, like, who is Jesus? He's begotten, not made.
Yeah. That's what I was going to ask about. Like,
light
what does
from
that
light,
mean?
True
what
God from true God.
Yeah. Begotten, not made. What are we saying with that?
So begotten would be like it's the phrase that you use for kind of birthed. And so like if you look at like King James version of the Old Testament, you'll see so-and-so begat so-and-so begat so-and-so, and that's a different verb tense of begat.
Familiar
right?
with the begatting, right. But so, like when the not made part.
So it means that God didn't create Jesus, that Jesus is fully God and birthed out of God.
Okay.
But God didn't, like God created humanity.
Right.
But God did not create Jesus.
Right.
Yeah.
God is fully a part of Jesus. Jesus is fully a part of God and was begotten from God.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's this idea, like, there was never a time where there was, like, one being,
right.
and all of a sudden there's three.
Right.
Like, okay. Jesus was always there. Kind of, like, that was kind of the idea. And, you know, they're really getting into the weeds, you know, and putting it in the creed. Like,
And one of the earliest divisions in the church between East and West comes out in the third article of the creed when we talk about the Spirit and whether the Spirit was begotten of the Father and of the Son or just of the Father. And so it's that question of is the Spirit on the same level as the Son or is it hierarchical and that it's Father? And so the Greek Orthodox Church will hold that the Spirit and the Son are equal. In a way that the creed doesn't necessarily make clear in our reading of the creed.
Yeah, I mean, it comes Father, Son, Spirit.
Yeah.
You know, boom, boom, boom. But, and then when they're like, what should we say about the Spirit? I'm like, man,
nah,
we don't know. Which, yeah, you know, probably, again, pretty reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, what's the nitty gritty of that, right? Like, if you don't, like, if you categorize the hierarchy of, like, the Trinity a little bit differently, how does that really play out?
What do you mean?
Like, if you think that the Holy Spirit is on the same level as Jesus or hierarchically, like, under Jesus, how does that difference in philosophy about that affect your theology?
Well, so it affects how you think about the Trinity itself, mm-hmm. right? And so if the Trinity is three fully equal, as Patrick was saying, fully equal, always present beings, as soon as you say, well, okay, Jesus was begotten of the Father, but the Spirit was begotten of the Father and the Son, well, now, how is that not the same, right? It elevates others above one. And so mm-hmm. then you don't have three equal, always present beings. You have two equal, always present beings on this third thing. And so then the question is, well, do you have a Trinity or do you have something, right? And that's the philosophical wrestling that that I don't think is as critical to the practical way that things are carried out in your faith, but that's the theological, philosophical wrestling that happens. Yeah.
Okay. So let's get into some things that are not in the creed.
Okay.
So as Protestants, one of the things that's not in the creed is I believe in sola scriptura.
True.
So that means I believe in scripture alone. And that's a big, big thing for just about every Protestant church. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's where we're getting our information about who God is and what's going on is from the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
That's not in the creed.
Agreed.
Yeah. And the other thing that's controversial is one Catholic and apostolic church.
Yeah, it's only only controversial because we don't understand what Catholic means. But sure, go ahead.
Right.
Well, I mean, but it means universal.
Right.
But one church calls itself the Catholic Church.
Right.
And they're also not the universal church. So.
Which is, at the time when the creed was written, they were, right? And and the word still means universal, right? So it is a problem with our understanding. I can hear the challenge. But when we say, I believe in one lower C Catholic Church, not capital C, lower C Catholic Church, we're saying, what we believe is, even in the midst of our divisions, we believe that we are one church in Christ.
Yeah.
That's what we're ultimately pointing to. Now, do we misunderstand that? Sure, all the time. But it's not the creed's fault that we misunderstand
it. Right.
Yeah. So one of the things that we went through in our young adult class a few weeks ago that you led, and I thought you did a good job of it, it was asking the question, what is the minimum amount one can believe and still be considered a Christian reasonably?
Yeah.
And I think you had a good definition of that. At least you want to chime in here. What do you think is the minimum amount one could believe and still be conceivably conceived as a Christian? And you don't need to fully form, but at least what's something.
Jesus' divinity, I think, is probably, to be Christian, Jesus' divinity, because that's the whole definition, right? That was the distinction between Judaism and Christianity.
I'm 100% with you.
I think that
is one of the big pieces. And if you maybe you have like two, I think that's one of two.
Yeah. But like if you're going to say like an Abrahamic religion, right? Then I would say probably a loving omnipotent God.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like that's probably the bare minimum.
Sure.
Yeah,
and then like everything else is a little bit of a jumping point from there.
Yeah, I think what I would have added, I think this is what I said in the class, is that right, you have this understanding of Jesus as God's son, implying Jesus' divinity, but that also that Jesus' death and resurrection matters for humanity in some saving implication and what that looks like. Yeah,
yeah, obviously, and maybe this is a future podcast, we get into like all the Christian ideas of how the death and resurrection save humanity, but I think one of the things that it's hard to walk from this Bible and land on it. Something is coming from Jesus' death and resurrection that somehow reunites humanity and God.
Yeah.
Whether there's a lot of churchy words we can kind of throw in. But I agree. I think those are the two. Jesus is divine and death and resurrection
matters.
Reconnect humanity and God.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now the Apostles' Creed has substantially more than that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, and there are churches that don't hold to the Nicene Creed. Like they will say, like, we don't look to the Nicene Creed as a primary statement of our faith, right?
Interesting. What churches do that?
I'd have to look. I just know that there are. Yeah. Okay. I mean, like, so to be a pastor in the Lutheran Church, when I'm ordained, one of the promises that I make is to uphold the Athanasian, Nicene, and Apostles' Creed as statements of right faith, right? So I agree that I abide by those. Not every church is going to make you say that when you become a pastor. It would be the simplest way. So it's not that any church is going to be like, we disagree with the Nicene, but they're not going to make you say, like, you have to uphold this as a statement of faith.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you have oaths that you take as a...
You make promises.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, I was just curious if there's any like kind of specific oath, like a Hippocratic oath type thing that's like, we all say this.
So there's a liturgy that you go through with the and the ordination is the same for everybody who's being ordained across the ELCA. Okay. So they ask you certain questions and say, are you going to do these things? And you say yes. Yeah. And
what did you have to do to be ordained?
I filled it out online.
Yeah. Did you have an oath?
I had to pay $35.
Right. Here's my credit card.
And then I could pay another $50 for the marriage packet.
No. Oh,
I did not.
What is the marriage packet?
It's just like how to do a wedding, basically, and like, you know, I don't need that stuff.
I'll start selling that for $30. I'll make a buck.
Yeah, it's on the online for free. So,
dang it.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into this, the Christianity Today article.
Okay.
And I think that there's some interesting stuff here of like, why is especially in evangelical churches, the creed coming back around?
Yeah.
What's the excitement there? And so I'm not going to pull from every one of these interviews, but I will pull from a few of them.
Sure.
Okay. All right. So this is from Glenn Packiam, author of What's a Christian Anyway?
Okay.
He should have contacted us.
Yeah.
Two things.
We told
Tell
you.
Tell him.
Boom, boom.
Here, yeah. Glenn.
Short book.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we could always expand upon it,
yeah.
But I think that's the minimum, right?
Like, and that was our context, right? Yeah. So we're trying to get to like, what's the thing that unites us with other Christians, and what's the thing that like, if someone said, "I don't believe that," you'd be like, "Then I don't think you're a Christian," right? That was not a condemnatory statement; it was just an understanding. Right. Like, then I don't. Think
that's
we
where
in the
we
same
split
place.
In yeah. our understanding. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, he's talking about the power of the Nicene Creed. Is it reminds us of a bigger church, an older church, worldwide and historic. He's going to tell a story, you know, like he came into a church that had a lot of like scandal and there was a shooting in Colorado Springs. And when he was talking to young people, there was a lot of disillusion.
Yeah.
And according to him, they weren't ready to quit and walk away from faith, but they were not interested in, I just don't want to buy it because somebody is clever and able to speak about this from the pulpit.
Yeah.
So the creed connected them to a historic faith, not just a what is my pastor dynamic faith. And so I think, so let's talk about this for a bit. This is part of the creed.
Yeah.
When we say it, we're saying it same as people who said it 1700 years ago.
Roughly.
Yep. Roughly.
Different language,
and,
for sure.
Yeah.
And all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that I don't know how many Christians have said it between now and then. A billion.
Yeah, sure.
More?
Probably.
So I think that's, you know.
Math is hard. I don't know. But yeah,
there's like a lot of people. There's like 2.1 billion Christians in the world right now. Again,
at least a billion of those are saying the creed.
Not everybody has said the creed, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but.
But if there's 2.1 billion, then yeah, at least. Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe.
And do you count like the same people saying it multiple times, or there's each individual?
That's a good point.
Every time I say it, I count as one.
Yeah.
Either way, it's a lot of people.
Yeah, but you're when you say it, you are connected to, at minimum, a billion other people historically who have said the same.
Yeah.
Maybe two, maybe three. I have no idea. You know, math is hard.
Yeah.
But at least a lot of people.
At least a lot.
You know.
I think for me, the argument that he's making here is really the root of why many people have held on to liturgy as a whole for so long, right? You know, there was that push, and I remember this really strongly when I was growing up in the 90s and early 2000s, of, you know, the non-denominational movement and stripping away all the liturgy stuff that people thought was a barrier and was hard to understand and it didn't make sense. And I agree with all those things. It can be a barrier. It can be hard to understand. It doesn't always make sense. But when you do invest in it, it is there to root you and to connect you across time and space with people who have been saying this for hundreds of years. And it's not that it never should change, right? The liturgy should be the work of the people who are there in that space. It should be meaningful for that context, but it's there to root us and to connect us to something that we can't physically see. That's always been its purpose. And so I think in some ways, I can't speak for Glenn in particular, but I think in some ways the evangelical movement that pulled away from that so hard is now seeing within their own people a need to connect with something deeper than just a charismatic leader. And what's deeper than a charismatic leader that other parts of the church have had for the entire time? Well, that's liturgy, right? And so you're seeing a move back to the Nicene Creed. You're seeing a move back to things like Advent and Lent Lite and, you know, Holy Week, so, and things like that. You're seeing that in a lot of evangelical circles right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely would agree that they're trying, some of the evangelical circles are trying to recapture something there that because it probably it's not working as well.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
And or they're seeing like it can create big numbers by having a charismatic leader. But once that leader's gone, there's yeah. nothing left to hold on to.
And or when that leader has a scandal.
Yeah. Or the, yeah, when the leader is, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's even less to hold on to, yeah. you know. So this is, the Nicene Creed is something to hold on to. So yeah. I do like this idea. All right, it connects us to history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The idea that we're all there. You know, something, there's something powerful about saying the Lord's Prayer, knowing that, like, I'm saying this.
Billions of Christians.
With people yeah. that have come
billions
before.
And billions.
And the people who come after yep. are all saying this united together is really powerful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is a powerful thing.
Yeah. I would say that the Lord's Prayer unites us even more broadly than the Nicene Creed. But I'm with you. Yeah. yeah. Same goes.
Yeah.
All right. And then this is from Matthew Barrett, author Ooh. Of Simply Trinity.
That's my,
these
that's
all
my
sound
autobiography.
Like just bangers.
Yeah. Simply Trinity, yeah. the David Bowser story.
This is similar. There's a solidarity that is missing in a lot of evangelical churches. Are we just standing on our own 2 feet and on our own authority? Mm-hmm. And I would say mm-hmm. yes. By ourselves on an island. Yeah. Are we connected to Christians down through the ages who confess the strength? So, yeah. This is, you know, a great one. So now if you're connected to this idea mm-hmm. or this ideal and your family moves, mm-hmm. you know, like finding something new that's connected to that same thing. Let's find yeah. the same root
yep.
that's connected to the same tree or a different root to the same tree. But if you're in a church that is driven by a charismatic speaker
yeah.
or mm-hmm. a wonderful worship band, yeah. then you have to find that.
Yeah.
And that's much harder. I mean, like, what if you're just not there?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. yeah.
All right. This is from Charles Hames Jr.
Some great names here.
I know.
This is a
what is his book name?
he's a Christian Methodist Episcopalian bishop.
No book yet.
Oh, it's Christian Methodist
Episcopal bishop.
Yeah, AME, American Methodist Episcopal. Yeah, so it's a particular denomination. It's a historically black denomination that came out of a split. Yeah, so AME Church. Yeah, the church in which the shooting happened in Charleston was an AME church.
Familiar.
Yeah.
All right. He says, you know, he thinks that kind of like a connection to tradition is a little bit cyclical.
Mm.
And that Gen Zers are more apt to embrace it like this than my friends who are in Gen X.
Okay. Yeah. I see that. Yeah. yeah.
You're in Gen X. How do you feel about tradition?
Not into it. No. I whenever I talk to people and they ask me questions kind of about like this stuff, so I fully admit I'm a bad Lutheran. Yeah. I don't really care about the church calendar. I'm historically like, I don't really care about Advent.
No.
It's not for me. I think there's incredible value there, but, you know, just naturally, I think generationally, you know, maybe for Gen X and millennials, like, we've seen institutions fail us so many times.
Sure.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, it's like, oh, you know, like, who cares? You know?
There's, like, a little, like, anti-establishment, I think, that comes along with being millennial and Gen X, right? Like,
sure.
There's just, kind of, like, a little bit of that in us, at least a drop.
Sure.
So,
little bit of rebellion against the norms.
Right.
Yeah. I think those are both fair and very realistic points. I also think that, at its best, liturgy, the creed, is anti-establishment and is a little bit rebellious, right? Like when we're taking it, like sometimes, we're, you know, the church is using it to uphold the church, but if we're like really living into the creed, like, nah, this thing is tearing things down and pointing us in a new world every way. Yeah.
It's been very helpful to me kind of in my own journey with things to kind of revisit how the church in and of itself was upsetting the status quo at the beginning, right? And how we've kind of, stuff changed and we became the status quo, right? And then that and came with its own host of problems, right? But like the kind of revisiting that, like, oh, but this was always sort of a little bit like subversive when it came to power structures, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's for me, that satisfies that drop of anti-establishment.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that, you know, starting with Gen X is a little bit of like the world needs to be torn down. And maybe Gen Zs are asking what needs to be rebuilt.
Yeah.
And I think that is a good question for them to ask. And so they're looking to maybe the liturgy or a Nicene Creed or a historic church has a lot more meaning for them, you know, at this point than it did for me when I was growing up.
Yeah.
All right. I'll do one or two more of these. Ronnie Kurtz, author of Proclaiming the Triune God.
Wow.
Love it.
Yeah.
So he planted a Baptist church and they did a series on the Trinity. And part of that series, they began reciting the Nicene Creed. One of the things he could see
happen. So creative.
One of the things they could see happen is that people could now start talking about the Trinity and articulating theology.
Sure.
And I think that's true.
That's not a bad thing.
Yeah. Instead of like, again, instead of like digesting what a charismatic preacher says, this is like, I'm thinking through theology of what this means. Like you mentioned about begotten, not created or not made. Let's having to think through that. What does that mean? Let's wrestle as the early church wrestled with these phrases. Let's wrestle with them now and figure out, is that something that I'm connected to or ever considered?
Yeah.
I mean, this was such a big deal that they were fighting over this one another.
Yeah.
Santa Claus
slapped a guy.
Slapped a person.
We need more about that. Everybody keeps saying that.
There's not much more to say.
Santa Claus slapped a guy. Historic, that's all you've got.
The historic figure, St. Nicholas, the real St. Nicholas, was at the Council of Nicaea, and I believe it was Arius.
Arius, the proponent, maybe connected loosely, maybe a Nazi, the early Nazi Arius.
But it was about the divinity of Christ, and allegedly in the notes for like the meeting minutes, basically Saint Nick slapped him.
Oh my gosh, I would love to like slap somebody and get recorded in the minutes
for like generations, and then become Santa Claus, right?
Like, if you slap somebody in a council meeting, would they get recorded in the minutes?
I imagine it'd be recorded in a number of places.
Yeah, I'm gonna go comb through the minutes of all the meetings. Anybody get slapped? I mean, this is a big, big deal.
Yeah.
And now we can kind of recite it, and some of us, maybe even many of us, recite it without even considering or thinking through the words that we're saying.
Right. Which is always the danger of doing, like, I mean, that's always the thing, is that it becomes too normalized, that we forget it's subversive. We forget the ways in which it calls us. And so we do have to be intentional in the way that we're saying, in the same way that we have to be intentional with the Lord's Prayer or communion or any of these other practices that are super meaningful, but only when we're in that space of like, oh yeah, this isn't just a rote thing that I do.
Right.
All right, we'll do one more here from Susan Nicholson.
Susan.
We got a lady.
She's got a lady. Yeah. She's a professor.
It's an evangelical circle. It was going to be tough.
Right, yeah.
She says, if we're not teaching good theology on a regular basis, then our church is in trouble. If someone says Jesus was just a good teacher, we want the phrases from the Creed ready to hand. We believe that he is God from God, light from light, true God from true God. This is basic to our understanding of who Jesus is, and it's why we think we're really worshiping God when we are worshiping Jesus. I think this kind of gets us back to like the base roots of Christianity. Yeah. If we're connected to the creed well, we're connected to those base roots well.
Yeah, I think that's meaningful. I don't think my first response to someone saying Jesus is a good teacher is going to be to quote the creed, but I think having the creed in my
begotten, not made.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Jesus was begotten, not me. Yeah. Like, I still think that's going to be, but I hear
slap him.
I hear what she's saying. I think having that or being rooted in that allows me to respond to that, to say like, no, Jesus was more than our faith is that Jesus was more than just a good teacher, right? And be able to talk about what that looks like.
Not just a good teacher.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. As long as teaching is, we would probably say not even that good, because it's weird and it's hard and it's very, very difficult.
And he doesn't explain his parables well. And he's like, Jesus, even your explanation of the parable is confusing. Like, that doesn't make it any better.
No, he's a little bit like the Salvador Dali of like religious teachers. You know, you're kind of like, what, half the time?
I mean,
is that a nose?
Right.
Very, very pro, but like, yeah, it is. Yeah. There are many times he says things that are intentionally confusing with no explanation.
If you were like rating Jesus along like college professors today, you'd be like, dude, this professor's super hard to understand.
Right. Somehow he's at Harvard.
It wasn't clear what was going to be on the final exam.
But we all got A's.
That's right. But we all got A's. So I guess it's fine. That's it.
All right. So what do you think? Is the Nicene Creed cool again?
I don't know about cool again. I'm pro creed. I think it's valuable. I think it's good that people are rediscovering it, if they're rediscovering it again.
I think the Apostles' Creed has better branding than the Nicene Creed does.
Because it's shorter?
It's shorter, and the term like the Apostles' Creed feels a little bit like, you know.
Yeah. That is why they named it that. You know, gives it that little leg up.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, you're going to encounter the word apostle in the Bible or in church. Right. You'll never encounter the word Nicene. That's for your average Christian. There's a bit of, I don't know what that means.
I don't think you can get Nicaea in the, I'd have to look. Nicaea might appear as like a place, but I don't think it does.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. Nicene Creed is cool again. And more importantly, liturgy is cool again. Yeah, and most importantly, Advent is cool again.
Oh my gosh.
You keep talking. Yeah, are you gonna wear like a backwards hat on Sunday?
I'm Advent.
Are we still? We're not still in Advent. We're in.
No, we're not in Advent.
We're in the Easter season.
Advent
when
is only
Pentecost. I have no idea.
It's 50 days after Easter.
Oh my gosh, they can't pick a date.
I shockingly knew that.
Well, Pentecost means 50. Like that's.
Now, yeah, are you gonna teach me to take your chair, turn it backwards,
that's right.
Sit in it?
Hey,
let's
kids.
Do some liturgy.
Will you write a rap?
They can't pick a date for. All right. So, do you want to know Pentecost? Do you want to know more, or do you want me to shut up?
Like, I kind of do.
Can we call the Nicene Creed extreme, but with an X?
Yes, we can do that.
And drink Mountain
so,
Dew.
Pentecost is a Jewish holiday.
Okay.
Or is based on a Jewish holiday, right? So the disciples were all in Jerusalem to celebrate Pentecost, and Pentecost, the Jewish holiday, was 50 days after the Passover. That's how they marked it. So when Passover moves, Pentecost moves, and so now. Because Easter is aligned with Passover because Jesus was killed at the Passover. And so that's when Easter is. 50 days after that is when we celebrate Pentecost because it's still aligned with that.
Sweet.
Yeah.
So Pentecost moves the same way Easter moves because it's 50 days after Easter.
Yeah. I'm not sure that I will really retain. Like, I'll ask you next year. I'll be like, when is Pentecost?
Yeah. 50 days after Easter.
Tell me. Yeah, and yeah.
This year, it is on June 8th.
June 8th. Okay. Yeah.
No, it's the day where every good Christian wears... Every good Lutheran wears red to church, except for me, which I forget.
Because you don't remember, yeah.
Reformation is the day every good Lutheran wears red. Pentecost, all Christians, yeah. Yeah, that's
all,
more
every good Christian.
Well,
no.
I mean, Pentecost is Pentecost is the coming of the Spirit. Yeah. So it's like, you know, and red is the color that we use to symbolize the Spirit. So Pentecost is more broadly red across the board. Red would be, or red on Reformation is uniquely Lutheran, because Catholics aren't exactly celebrating that one.
All right, there you go. Nicene Creed. It's cool.
Nicene Creed.
Yep.
Bring it back. Say it every day.
Yeah.
Or at least once a week. Yeah. Say it sometimes.
Yeah.
It's there.
I'm going to say it with the kids on the mission trip, and they're going to be like, oh,
what?
This is pretty cool.
Yeah. I'm going to put my backwards hat on. Like, yeah. Come on, kids. Let's say some creeds. All right. Well, hey, if you enjoyed this
first
conversation.
First one's
free. You got to pay for the Athanasian. Yeah. That's where the good stuff is at. Hey, if you enjoy this episode, you can send us your thoughts on the creed and whether or not it's cool again, or if you grew up saying it or not. We'd love to hear your creed stories. You can send this beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com, and you can find all of our podcasts at beyondsundaypodcast.com.
All right, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.